I'd like to move now to a kind of a panel type discussion. Brian, you still on, I hope?
Yes, sir, I am.
All righty. Another question for you here. Looks like from a producer again, asking that if my base production is around 8 million pounds and I want to protect about 50% of that production, will I pay only the lower premium for that first 4 million?
Yes, that's correct. So if you say you insure 6 million pounds, 4 million of that will be under the lower premium schedule and 2 million will be under the higher. So it's not what your production is, it's what your insurance amount is.
Okay, that helps explain that. Eric, question for you. Does LFP cover animals grown under a contract, such as with an integrator, like chicken and hogs are often organized?
So there's two components to collection under, is it LIP you said, or LFP?
Well, how about if you explain both, because I think there was some concern about each program.
Yeah, I mean, my interpretation of the Farm Bill is, that you can have contract growers that are, if they're in possession of the eligible livestock when the death occurred, then they would be the beneficiaries.
And under LFP, would there be coverage ever available for integrators there?
I'm not sure about LFP. So if you have a drought and... that's a good question. Under LIP, if the death occurs, there's some liability. Under LFP, it's not as clear to me.
Okay, fair enough. Brian, question here says, after sign-up for the program, will a producer be allowed to choose the months they want to cover? And if so, how would that affect the 4 million pound premium subsidy?
No, it's not a monthly option. You'll choose a certain percentage, and that'll be spread over. My understanding, it'll be spread over the entire year. You will not. It's not like LGM where you can choose the months that you want coverage.
Okay. Good. That explains that a little better. Under LFP, Eric, how is it that lost feed is going to be valued? Will that be essentially at replacement cost in harvested forage, or will it be some kind of a market estimate of the value of that grazed forage?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think corn is going to be used as a proxy for the price of feed. The price of corn is going to be the 12 or 24 month average, whichever is higher, and then there are going to be some assumptions about the conversion rate for different types of livestock. So, I think going into, if you're submitting a claim under LFP, you need to know what type of livestock you had, and then potentially the weight, and the rest should be computed by the FSA in terms of that. So there's not going to be local hay prices, for example. It'll just be a single corn price used for the program.
Okay. Somewhat of a similar question, Brian, for you, the questioner asks, when will USDA determine the prices that they will use for setting for the feed inputs used under the program?
Yes, that was my one of my remaining questions. It's unclear. It's not specified. In the dairy subtitle, it says we'll use the corn price received as reported in the Ag Prices Report. But if we want to use the MILC as a pattern, under the MILC, there's no MILC payment until the revised corn and soybean numbers and hay numbers come out. I don't want to venture a guess into which way it could go, but since there are significant revisions on the corn price, I'm thinking that it'll wait till the revised corn numbers come out. So, for example, if you have April, at the end of April, the preliminary April corn values come out. It's not until the end of May that the revised corn ones for April are released. And that's the most likely scenario, but it's unclear which way it's going to go.
Okay. Fair enough, because, again, a number of details still to be worked out. So thank you for your thoughts about that, Bill. Eric, a question here. If you might could explain your comment on only mitigated livestock, where you made a comment, I guess, regarding eligible for payment at the 80% rate versus actual retained livestock, which may be compensated at a 60% rate.
Right. Yeah, and that's a. I think that's a big distinction here. So, if you had livestock losses under in 2012 or 2013 due to, if you were in one of those drought-related counties under the specifications we talked about, and you either sold or disposed of livestock due to drought conditions, then the payment rate is 80%. Otherwise, it's 60%, which is consistent with what the program is going forward and what the program has been in the past. So even though the months are different, if you did, so, for example, in Texas, where, I know a lot of livestock were sold early due to the drought, the payment rate would be 80% instead of 60%.
Okay, very good. Brian, another question here asks, do you have any kind of margin data for different rations other than the base ration? For example, dairy farmers that may live near ethanol plants using DDGs, or a dairy that maybe uses only a little alfalfa or corn silage?
There's only one ration for the entire program. There is not the flexibility of having a farm-specific ration. Everyone is assumed to use that ration as indicated in that one table that I showed you. There is not multiple rations to take account of local conditions.
Okay, great. Eric, question here asks, how will any NAP payments be affected by payments that you receive? It's asked under LFP, but maybe we should ask under any of the programs that you might be receiving federal payments on.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's not clear to me with the language in the farm bill. I'm not sure how those would be covered. Given that they're both proctored through FSA, I would assume that there couldn't be any duplication of payments, but I'm not sure about that.
Okay, details yet to come, I guess.
Yeah.
Brian, question here asked, do we know when the margin program sign-up period is expected to begin? I know you mentioned September earlier, but is that when we expect the sign-up to start, or will that just be when rules are released?
It's going to be when the rules are released, and the earliest is going to be in September, but I doubt if that's going to be achieved. I would probably say at least this year, which could be different than a normal year, could be January 1st, 15. And if it's anything like the MILC program, they may make it retroactive to this, October 1. But again, with the conditions the way they are, it's unlikely that there'd be any payments anyways. If it was made retroactive, at least in terms of 2014. No, we're not sure. Again, no details provided.
Yep. All right. Fair enough. Another question for Eric, and I want to thank you both for sticking with me. There's a lot of questions here. I'm trying to move through them about as quickly as we can. I appreciate your patience. Eric, LFP is also available for mechanically harvested forage, yes or no?
I would assume yes, but again, that's not clear in the farm bill, but my guess would be that it is included, but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, because of course that's somewhat of the distinction with the PRF program as to level of coverage and whatnot, the insurance program, pasture rangeland forage, just whether mechanical harvested is used, methods are used or not. So that may be where that was coming from. All right, Brian, back to you again. That the production history will be defined in terms of marketings rather than production, is that a potential issue in your mind, or is it a mistake in the farm bill it asks?
That's a good point. I hadn't made that distinction, and I don't want to give an incorrect answer to that. I thought that the production history was based on production, not marketings. Obviously, they're highly correlated, but I don't want to give a wrong answer to that. I hadn't really thought about that distinction. Now, I'd have to look at the if you go on to Eric, I can look at the farm bill right now and see what the wording is.
Okay, fair enough. Eric, will the LIP compensation for wolf depredation. Will that be retroactive, or do you know about that?
Yeah, I mean, the new farm bill, the way it's written, is retroactive going back to October 1st, 2011. So everything in this new farm bill is retroactive back to when the last farm bill expired. So, yeah, I mean, losses, you know, the one change, you know, even under LFP, for example, you know, maybe you're under drought that under the 2008 farm bill where you would have received 3 months of you know, compensation, maybe it's now 5 months. It's going to be 5 months as of October 1st, 2011. So, you know, every part of here is going to be revised as of when the last farm bill expired.
And only documentation will be required then to demonstrate that a payment should be made. Is that right?
Yeah, well, and that's one of the issues with LIP is, you know, documenting things that happened a couple years ago. And that's a question I've asked to, you know, some folks at FSA. And the answer I've been given is, you know, they are evaluating. I mean, they sort of understand that documentation is going to be a little more difficult based on past experiences. So to go back, the documentation might be a little different than if you're documenting for the current year. In the same way that if you're, you know, under LFP and you're trying to document the sale of livestock due to drought, you know, the documentation you would need for that would also need to be there. So, you know, I think the, you know, FSA has some things posted in terms of what they'll accept. These things aren't necessarily in the farm bill, but I think it's going to be a matter of contacting, you know, your local FSA office and just, you know, allowing them to judge kind of what you have and how adequate that is.
Right. So here's another question for you, Eric. It follows somewhat along the same line there, asking that if a state already has a verification and compensation program for livestock depredation due to wolves or perhaps grizzly bears, how would it be how will the new program be implemented, and in that regard, and what would stop a person from applying for compensation under both programs that maybe they would be eligible for?
You know, there's nothing in here that would interact with, you know, state-level programs. So my guess would be that if this is covered at the federal level, the state probably backs off maybe some of these things, and maybe covers, you know, bears, for example. You know, as far as the duplication between those two programs, you know, I think, you know, the FSA is pretty clear about kind of what they cover. And so, you know, whether that interacts with the state office, I'm not sure if that would lead to a change in the state. I don't want to venture a guess as to what that implies. But, you know, I think it's pretty clear in terms of what this program will accept.
Very likely that will be a determination on a state-by-state basis, given there are multiple states potentially involved in that type of a question as well, right?
So, exactly right, yep.
Yeah. Okay, Brian, any
yes.
Thoughts?
Yeah, I let me just read what it says in terms of production history. The production history of the dairy operation for the margin protection program is equal to the highest annual milk marketings, as was mentioned. Milk marketings of the participating dairy operation during any one of the 2011, 2012, or 2013 calendar years. So it is the marketing. So the difference between marketing and production obviously would be slippage and on-farm use and any type of donation or anything else. Again, the correlation's got to be extremely high.
Right. So here's another question that follows a bit on that same theme. Could you elaborate a little on how it is that we think that new producers may be required to establish what their actual production history is under the new program going forward?
No, there are some new, there is some provision made for new producers, and if you bear with me, I could read those specific sections. It won't take me long. And those dairy operations that have been in operation for less than a year, the participating dairy operator shall elect one of the following methods, and there's two methods. Volume of actual milk markings for the months the participating dairy operation has been in operation extrapolated to a yearly amount, an estimate of the actual milk markings of the participating dairy operation based on the herd size of the participating dairy operation relative to the national rolling herd average data published by the Secretary. So there's provisions made for those new operations. They do not have to have a long history to participate in the program.
Okay, great. That's good to know. So we're getting close to time where I need to close this off. I'm going to ask one more question each of Eric and Brian, and then we'll move to close the webinar. Again, thank you, everyone, for participating. Eric, one final question, kind of a summary here, is asked, since the funding for ELAP is limited, will the benefits available under that program be available on a first-come, first-served basis, or will they end as of the year when those applications have been received, so there's no, I guess, moving forward with the benefits into future years, I believe is what the question asks.
Yeah, well, so, I think the, if we look at some of the past payments made under ELAP, they've been well below that $20 million number. I think the highest amount we've had is about $12 million in 2009. If those do, let's say get up to $20 million, if it is binding, I think the FSA then has to determine how to allocate those funds. My guess would be that, yeah, it would probably be, first come. But, I don't want to venture a guess on that. I mean, I would think, if swine flu was mentioned earlier, my thought is that that would fit under ELAP. That seems the most reasonable to assume that it would fit under ELAP. And so, it might be the case that the payments would be higher this year than in past years. But again, the $20 million hasn't been binding thus far, which I think was one reason why it was brought down from, I think it was $50 million before, down to the $20 million number now.
Okay, great. One last question, Brian, for you is kind of a kind of a summary question here, but maybe really important for people to have an answer to understand exactly how this is moving forward. Question asks, will there be a rule-making process for putting together the details on the program that allows for public comment before those rules are actually adopted or perhaps even implemented? Is there going to be a chance for public input on those?
My understanding is yes. There'll be a group of FSA people and others getting together and with the, obviously, cooperation of the Secretary developing the rules. And that has to be published in the Federal Register for public comment. And I'm unclear. I think it has to be there 60 days or maybe 90. I'm not quite sure on that. And again, that puts that September 1st deadline in jeopardy in terms of getting the final rules. I'm not optimistic that's going to happen. But no, there will be the typical chance for public input.
Okay, great. Thank you for that answer. And thank you both very much, again, for your time and excellent presentations and patience in answering so many different questions. We didn't get through all of them, but we did cover a good majority of the questions that came in, and thank you, audience, for sending those in to our team. As we move forward now, we have mentioned, I think maybe many of you know, that we're in the midst of a series of presentations on the 2014 Farm Bill. Today's presentation has been a second in our series, but we have a few others planned coming in the next several weeks. On the 24th of March, planning to cover commodity programs and crop insurance. The 31st, we're planning a series of presentations on the conservation title to cover horticulture and the beginning farmer programs, as well as some other dimensions there. April 7th, we've got presenters lined up to cover and discuss the nutrition title as well as the food policy programs under the 2014 Farm Bill. So we'd very much also like to hear from you about your ideas about topics that Ag in Uncertain Times, or together with the Farm Bill just being released, topics that you may want to see presentations on in the future. You certainly can enter those comments or suggestions in the chat pod now during the webinar as we finish up. Or if you want to send us an email, you certainly may do so at information@farmmanagement.org. As mentioned earlier, the recordings and other information, including the speaker slides, are available from today's program. You may access those at agandincertaintimes.farmmanagement.org. And at that site, you can also take a look at the over 100 individual presentations that the Ag and Uncertain Times team has compiled since we beginning to doing webinars back in 2009. So that URL is on the screen if you are interested in taking a look at that. And then finally, if you'd like, we have created a document here that you may download that includes the many different URLs and web addresses that have been mentioned throughout this webinar. So this provides a single reference for all that information, and you may download that now by clicking on the file name listed there, and then click on Save to My Computer as a button that will be highlighted at the bottom after you've clicked the link. And I might mention that document does include a recently released set of documents from the Farm Service Agency that kind of gives a brief overview of a number of the programs that have been adjusted or will be implemented under the 2014 Farm Bill. So you may want to take a look at that. Let me close now, then, by again extending our many thanks to all of today's presenters and their first-class presentations on the dairy margin and livestock disaster programs. Also want to make a special thank you to all of our sponsors for their help in helping to create this webinar series as well as get the word out about it. I want to also thank our Ag and Uncertain Times team as well as their sponsoring institutions for making the series possible. We'd also like to thank all of you who have participated in today's webinar conference. We sincerely hope that you find today's content of value in your work. We hope to see you again in one of our many upcoming programs. And until then, we offer you our sincerest hope for success in meeting the challenges of today's uncertain times. Until then, and for the Ag and Uncertain Times team, I'm John Hewlett.